Please, please, it's too much winning. We can't take it anymore. Mr. President, it's too much. And I'll say, no, it isn't. We have to keep winning. We have to win more.
You fought in the Clone Wars?
Yes. I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father.
Johnny, what's the difference between us and them? Because we live here.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, TJ Martinell, of the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast, coming to you from my war room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. The date is May 18th, 2022, another 15 days to flatten the curve. And this is the Dysfunctional Dystopia episode. And it's kind of dovetailing over the last, or off of the last podcast I did, where I was talking about the real man. Real man! And I did another podcast before that on A New Hope, so you can check that out. If you found this podcast, it's only on my website, I believe. It may be posted elsewhere, but you can go look at those. It's kind of going off of that topic. I do this from time to time. I know that this is not very common for people nowadays, but I do think. I do take the time to have some quiet moments to just process things. And I was thinking about how some of the stuff I've been observing over the past, say, 12 years. And the reason I'm doing this podcast is for you people who are noticing this stuff as well and wondering if you're insane. Like, are you the only person noticing this? No, you're not. If you agree with this message, you are the resistance. These are all behaviors that I think is just, they're really irrational, they're illogical, and it's, in my opinion, not hard to understand. So this is the part where I don't understand how people don't understand. Of course, actually, I do. It's called A Lack of Self-Awareness. I did a podcast on that recently, too. So we're going to go through. I have quite a long list, and I might be more thorough with some than others. So the first one is this attitude or belief that if something doesn't affect you directly, you shouldn't care. That you should only care about things that directly affect you. Which makes about as much sense as living downstream from a dam and not caring about the dam. Oh, the dam needs to be repaired. Well, great. Well, why should I care? Well, if the dam breaks, you're going to be in a flood. You're going to need flood insurance. Of course, that's a little bit more of an easier to connect the dots. But I'll give an example is, you know, I remember one time I was driving through a town that I used to live in, and it had kind of good aesthetics. It was right near these mountains, and they had built all these new apartments that just looked ugly as sin. It was an eyesore, and I was like complaining about it. And there was this buddy next to me, and he says, "Why do you even care? You don't live in those apartments." And I was thinking, one, he acted like that's actually another behavioral trait I'll get into. But his idea was like, "Why do you care?" And I go, "I don't know, because it's ugly." Like, it's an eyesore. I mean, it's like when I care when I see people out going out and about who are dressed sloppy. They don't groom well. They're not in good shape. They just look disheveled. And people say, "Well, why do you care?" It's like, because it is a visual, it is an assault on my visual, it's an assault on my eyes. It's an assault on my vision. Right, this is why people live in areas with natural scenic beauty and are willing to pay more than living in the middle of nowhere. Right? Does anybody want to live in the desert? I mean, some people, but if you show me a picture of a house in a Swiss Alp village and show me that same house in the middle of some area in the Great Plains where there's nothing but just prairie fields, right? Which one is going to be more visually pleasing? So this, the next one is kind of a follow-up. If it doesn't affect them directly, they don't see why they should care, or they think that the problem doesn't exist because they don't have to deal with it. And I've seen this. This would be, as I said on the other podcast, I'm in athletic shape. I'm in peak physical, you know, as close to peak physical condition as I choose to be right now. But it's definitely in the top tier. I would probably say I'm probably in the top 4% of America. And that number's going, that percentage is going down in terms of the number of Americans in good of shape. Not that my physical condition is getting better, but a lot of people's are getting worse. But I don't have to suffer from obesity to see what's right in front of me. And if someone says, hey, we got an obesity epidemic. Well, dude, why you're not obese? Why would you care? Are you kidding me? And then here's another one. If you care about something that's going on, let's say collectively, socially, culturally, some sort of like, whatever, it must be because it's something you're personally dealing with. And I see this all the time on Twitter where I make a comment about something where, you know, I see all sorts of horrible stuff going on and point it out. And somebody goes, oh, you know, basically makes a comment about like, the only reason you care is because you had to deal with it or you're dealing with it. It's like, no, I don't have to deal with it. I don't have to deal with something directly to know that that is not good. And it's got implications for us as all. Like this idea that if this, there's this mindset, and I didn't even have this in my notes, but there's these people who have this sense of this hyper atomization. They feel like they, as if nobody can affect them negatively. Well, okay, great. How did that work in the last 2 years when you weren't allowed to go to the gym? And you weren't allowed, you know, and someone says, well, I don't go to the gym. Great. You weren't allowed to go eat at your favorite restaurant. You weren't allowed to go to the bar. You weren't allowed to do all this stuff because the government locked it down. How did that go for you? And why did that happen in part? Because the degradation of our society and culture and our understanding of civil liberties. And on top of that, understaffed hospitals because our education system screwed up. And on top of that, because people are obese. 74% of those who were hospitalized for COVID were overweight. So yes, those things, if those people had not been obese, we would not have people in the hospitals and they wouldn't have had a justification to lock us down. Ergo, what happens beyond you affects you and you have a right to care about it. You know, when I see kids being muzzled up and having their spirits broken and feeling hopeless about the future, it concerns me, and I'm a bachelor, because these people are going to vote. How are they going to vote? They are going to have to maintain institutions and systems. Like, what happens when we have a bunch of halfwits running our wastewater management and our sewer systems and our water, our utility districts and our power lines? Like, you guys, a lot of you people assume that that stuff is just going to be taken care of. So here's another weird behavioral attitude behavioral pattern or just attitude. They interpret generalized statements as direct comments on them individually. So if I say, I'll give an example from my own life, kind of irony. I have buddies who were back when I was a reporter, people were constantly bashing the media. They're saying media is the enemy of the people and, you know, journalists are all this. I never took that stuff personally because I knew that it's not applied to me. Like, I never took any criticism personally because I knew it wasn't about me. They're talking about, you know, Rachel Maddow or whoever is on CNN. That's who they're talking about. They're not talking about TJ Martinell. Or if somebody makes a comment where it's like, you know, after this certain age, you know, you get into this kind of like, someone makes a accurate statement about a collective general group. and somebody's like, well, that doesn't apply to me. Okay, great. It doesn't apply to you. That doesn't make it not true. Here's another one. And somebody else said this on Twitter. I can't remember who it was, but there's this mindset or attitude, and we're going to deal with the Spurgs. We're going to deal with the autistic Spurgs. These are not things that people literally explicitly say. These are things they say by their actions. And actually, we're going to get to that Spurgy attitude down the list. So bear with me. They think it's okay to say things you really don't mean, and you say it in a very certain way on very important life matters. And if someone who you're talking to takes you seriously, your attitude is it's their fault for, like, you're not responsible for what comes out of your mouth. An example of that is somebody who tells someone to, really strongly urges them to get married to someone or encourages them to take out massive student loans. And then that marriage the person they marry turns out to be awful, and they can't pay off the student loans. And the person goes, well, nobody forced you. You chose to do those things. Yes. And you heavily advised them to do that. Well, you know, that was your choice. Okay. That doesn't excuse or negate the fact that you were responsible. You know, you're responsible for what comes out of your mouth. But this is this is one, again, I didn't have on the list. This all goes back to the fact that people have no shame. Like, we are a society devoid of shame. And now when you think about shame, what I refer to that is there's plenty of shaming going on and browbeating. But I'm talking about where people don't engage in certain behavior because it's shameful. It's beneath their dignity and their decency as an adult. And we really see that, frankly, I see it the worst, is the older the person is. And I'm not saying the older they get, the more shameful behavior. I'm saying that it becomes more evident. You know, when you're a child, you can engage in shame, you know, you act childish. But this is behavior where you're giving life-changing advice or counsel, and you're doing it in an assertive way. You're not suggesting it. You're saying, this is absolutely what you should do. There's no question about it. There is no doubt. It is as true as the sky is blue. And somebody goes out and does it, and it turns out bad, and you just laugh it off and say, well, you know, ha, 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 ha. Okay, please explain to me how messed up you are to have told someone to do something that hurt them, and then you think it's funny. This goes back to that podcast I was doing on the tweet that Alexander, I really need to figure out how to pronounce his last name, but Helene or something like that. He was talking about how a lot of young people feel hopeless about the future, and the powers that be think it's funny. This is what I'm talking about. You know, how many of those kids have student loan that they were told to take out that they can't pay off, and everyone around them thinks it's funny that they're suffering? And they think it's funny that anybody should actually care, which to me, it's like, you kind of answered your own question, guys, or you kind of proven the point made. You don't care about the fact that other people are suffering, and you think it's funny that people, like, you mock those who care. Anyways. Another one is giving catastrophically, you know, I call this the catastrophically bad advice. This is where someone, and they may not even realize it, but where someone gives advice that if you were to do it, it would be complete disaster for your life. It's like someone telling you to take out or to buy stock in Enron right before it crashed. And then, this is kind of touching back on what the other point I was just making, where people have no problem expounding on topics that they're completely ignorant about. I mean, the worst is like religion and politics. I'd say also like just other aspects of life that I've accumulated a lot of knowledge about. And so I can sit there and talk about it in an intelligent way. But I sit here and sometimes I'll have people just run their mouth on something. And because I'm knowledgeable about the topic, I know that they're out of their mind or that they don't know what they're talking about. And again, they are not talking in a suggestive, like, is this might be a possibility. They are giving very, very they're doing it in an authoritative way. They're saying, you need to take me seriously. And that's actually another disconnect that, you know what, we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. We'll hold on to that. This one's big. And I think a lot of you, this is going to probably hit home in a lot of ways. Caring about something external is considered a sign of weakness, low status, and indicates that you're susceptible to abuse and exploitation. So if you care about something that's going on around you, and it's not a like directly, enlightened selfishness type thing. It's more of like you actually care about something and you don't stand to gain directly. People see that as something to almost, they look at you with pity. I think that that's because people learn to just stop caring about stuff so that they'll be left alone. There's a whole pot from predatorial behavior. And this really goes back to another issue and problem I need to do a podcast on is this society has a profound deficit in what I would consider to be acceptable levels of violence. But that's for another podcast. And then people are freaking out. Hold your outrage until you actually listen to the podcast. Not caring about anything is considered a sign of high status and something to be respected. I think that this is partly they're thinking about psychology in terms of through an economic lens where scarcity creates value. So if you don't care about something, your caring about it is something to be earned because it's valuable. So if you're a person who just genuinely doesn't care about stuff, and if you come off as the type of person who's not supposed to care. See, this is, I did that other podcast on the script, right? Everybody has in their minds a script that they hand, or some people do, a script that they have assigned people based on archetypes. And so there's some people who are supposed to care, and they're the ones to be exploited and taken advantage of, and the responsibility is all going to be placed on them. Whereas the people who don't care, they're not going to be held responsible for anything. They can go do whatever they want, and it's okay for them to not care. They're not going off script. They're not reciting someone else's dialogue. All right, so now we get to one of the biggest ones. And this is the attitude people have that I see. And once more, for the Spurgs, this one applies to you. What people say trumps what they do. And what I mean by that is, if there's a disconnect between what they say and what they do, the mindset and mentality of these people is you need to go with the former. You need to assume that that's reality, is what they said so let's say somebody's doing something and what they say isn't matching up. If you're perceptive, you look at their behavior and you say, you know what, this is actually telling me what they're really about. And someone else says, well, no, because they didn't say that. Right. So if somebody does something but doesn't say it, see, this is the part of like how people communicate about human communication. A lot of people don't understand that action and behavior is a form of communication. And a lot of people get very uncomfortable with the idea that you are aware of what they're communicating by their actions, because their domain is in the verbal communication world. They're the kind of people who gain control over others through ambiguity. Right? So when there's that disconnect and there's that ambiguity, they want you to go with the verbal. Well, this is not, I didn't say that. I didn't say I didn't care about this. I didn't say, you know, what it's like. You know, if you're always late for an event, I'll give an example of this. Let's say that you're a guy who's never on time, except when it's something like a sports game. You're always on time for the sports game, but you're never on time for anything else. What you are saying, doesn't matter what you verbally say, doesn't matter what you actually say, what you are communicating is the football game, the sports game matters and is important to me, and it's important that I show up on time, and it is more important than these other social events. That is what you are saying. And but a lot of people say, well, they didn't actually say that, and you can't come to that conclusion just off of that. Yeah, actually we can. You just don't want us to. This is another one. This is going to just be, I could do a whole podcast on the implications of this, but doubling down is always preferred to correcting a mistake on the presumption that the other person or group that you're in conflict with will back down. So if there's a conflict and you're making a mistake, you just double down. And eventually someone else will bear the burden. That actually connects with another one I'm going to talk about in a minute. So the next one is this idea that your attitude determines reality. This is kind of a little bit of a play off of that Star Wars line from episode 1 where your focus determines reality. Actually, it doesn't. Your mindset does affect your life, absolutely, but this idea that your attitude determines reality. And this goes to what, I'll give an example. Let's say, that you have two people and one guy says gravity exists and another guy says gravity doesn't exist. And the guy who says gravity doesn't exist sits there and completely overwhelms the other person and argues with them relentlessly about how gravity doesn't exist. Let's say the guy who thinks gravity does exist finally just gives up, and the other guy basically, you know, soaks and basks in his glorious victory. Did that change reality? Did gravity cease to exist after that argument was won? And that goes to the next one. That what you or someone else wants to have happen and what you think or someone thinks will happen are indistinguishable. So it's like someone saying, it's going to rain today. Looks like it's going to rain today. And someone says, why would you want it to rain instead of be sunny? I don't, but there was a red sky in the morning and now there's clouds, dark clouds swirling around and it's starting to drizzle. Like, that is not me projecting my desire for what the weather should be onto reality. Like, that I'm interpreting the weather conditions. A more modern example or a more current example of that is, try talking to anybody about the Ukrainian conflict. Who do you think is going to win? Oh, the Russians are being destroyed. Oh, the Ukrainians are getting slaughtered. It's like, you guys are telling me who you want to win. Like, that is probably the worst or the best example that I've ever seen of people projecting what they want to have happen. Another dysfunction that I've noticed is, and I'm sure it won't be a shock to a lot of you, when forced to confront an unpleasant truth or deny, just be in denial, most people will be in denial. They will avoid actually dealing with the problem. And another one is that people repress natural, normal emotions and feelings in one area and express it in a dysfunctional manner in somewhere else. And an example of that is, let's say it's someone who's an open borders advocate for us here in America, and they really don't care a whole lot about their own family, but they are absolutely obsessed with either what's going on in Ukraine, or they're obsessed with the, they're very concerned about Ukraine's borders, but not ours. Or they're very concerned about Israel's borders, but not ours. Right? They are expressing a desire to preserve a nation, just not theirs. They're express, or people, you know, people I know who are just, were deeply personally concerned about, the, you know, women in Afghanistan when the Taliban took over. And I'm thinking, maybe you should be paying attention to your own daughters. Not to say that that everything going on in Afghanistan now is great. Not arguing. I'm saying you are ignoring what's going on in your own life and expressing those, you should be concerned that those concerns are legitimate. You should have them for your own women. You know, if you're a mother with a daughter, you should be concerned about your daughter, not the daughters of someone else in a country that you probably can't find on a map and whose language you don't speak and you know nothing about their culture. This is another one of many behavioral patterns that I've noticed is in our dysfunctional dystopia. Being disagreeable and immature is rewarded. Like if you're disagreeable and you're demanding and you just don't, and you're being irrational and you're refusing to do stuff, people reward it. If you're agreeable and mature, people see that as something to exploit. An example of that. When there's a conflict involving a disagreeable person and an agreeable person, the parties involved will always pressure the agreeable person to give in, regardless of the dispute or who's in the right. They will always just turn to the agreeable person and put pressure on them to just give in. Because they don't, because ultimately here's what would happen is they'd have to cut the disagreeable person out of their lives because he or she wouldn't budge. And they just don't want to do that because that's too hard work. And this goes back to the denial of reality. People would prefer to give a bad answer for the sake of just giving an opinion on something rather than admit they don't know something. For some reason, saying "I don't know" makes people very uncomfortable. I don't know if it's a know-it-all syndrome or it's just pride or arrogance, but people have a problem just saying, "Look, I," and not in a, like a negative, like patronizing way. Just saying, "Look, I'd love to help you, but I don't know. I don't have enough information to give you an answer or even make a suggestion." And this next one is related to kind of the podcast I've done recently. When people, by their actions or with their words or statements, convey emotions that contradict someone's perception of how things are, it's a moral offense. I mean, it's a little bit related to, you know, people, I guess, how could I put it? I think I'm gonna just leave that one there. Another trait of the dystopia is the belief that saying something negative is the same thing as being wrong. So if you say something negative about something, people's argument is you're being negative, that doesn't mean you're wrong. Like saying that's negative or you have a negative attitude, those things don't mean you're wrong. That doesn't disprove what you're pointing out. You know, the Titanic's sinking. Why are you being so negative about this boat? What does it have to do with the fact that it's sinking and we need to get on a lifeboat? Hey, we're $30 trillion in debt. Why are you so negative about America? We're almost at the end. This is another trait. The indifference to the suffering or emotions of others when discussing their own lives. And I don't think that this one is necessarily new. I remember reading about how all these American POWs who'd been in Japanese prisoner of war camps during World War II, which were the worst thing imaginable. And they come back home to America and they are trying to explain their life experiences. And the responses to many of them were, I couldn't believe what I was reading in this book, where one guy was telling his dad about the abuse he suffered, and his dad told him he was making it up and kind of just laughed it off. One time, there was one veteran who was talking to, I think it was a counselor or a therapist or something like that, and he said while he was in the middle of telling his story, the guy picked up a magazine and started reading it. I mean, what was happening is, I think that there was a lot of dysfunctional behavior. Oh, you know, oh really? The past had problems? Yes, they did. I'm glad we've discovered that. We're not the only generation to have problems. I think that what's happening here is an continuation of that. Because I absolutely believe that the suffering of the World War II generation came into the family, and that trauma has spread to other parts of society, and the response has been to just be indifferent. Indifferent to the suffering of children, indifferent to the suffering of young people, indifferent to the suffering of men. Just being indifferent to how the way we have things set up in our society, we're indifferent to how much pain it inflicts on people. The other, this is the last one I've noticed is, and this is a huge one on Twitter and Facebook, is this obsession with, I think, arguing with people is tied to this idea to keep them talking about something ad nauseum to prevent them from taking meaningful action. Because I think a lot of people just want to talk. They don't actually want to change. And there are people online, like myself, who we're not just talking about this stuff. We plan on doing something about it. And so this is why I just don't respond to people on a lot of stuff. Or when I see arguments, it's like, you know what? This argument's not going to go anywhere, and I don't need to collaborate with these guys to figure that out, to figure out what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, and so take all these different traits together. It's not just one. It's a combination of all of them, and you combine them, and you have, I think, something worse than an NPC. You have, this is a person, you know what you have? You have a person who's going to succeed in this society. It's almost like these are the traits you need to succeed. If you want to get up the corporate ladder, you got to behave like this. I mean, this is the one of the big lies that they at least I learned, or I was taught, is being mature, taking responsibility for your actions, doing all these different things that are good, healthy behavioral traits was the key to success. And yet Is that really what's going on? That's not what I see. And when I say succeeding, I don't mean they're accomplishing something meaningful. I'm talking about the people who are actually getting into positions of power, moving up the corporate ladder, who are doing well. I see people who are engaging in the most dysfunctional, shameless behavior I've ever seen. And other people have pointed this out, so I'm not the original, I'm not the first person to notice this, but if you are normal and you have, and you are you're in your right mind, in whatever word you want to use, you're awake, or you have, I guess, a moral code of some kind, you are not going to succeed. You will only go so far in our society. You will never go beyond a certain place. You will always be kept out, either actively or passively. So if a man is struggling in life and wondering why I'm not getting ahead, I'm not, by all means, this is a suggestion. I'm not making an authoritative statement. My one thing to contemplate or ponder is whether that's just because you're not going to be part of the big club. Like, your values are antithetical to what is considered normal. So I hope that this podcast did not make people discouraged or feel depressed. My hope is that there are people who are noticing these things and have been anxious about whether or not they're the only ones seeing it. And maybe this will bring relief to people who were wondering. Where they like sigh and they're like, oh, you know, I'm glad I'm not the only one seeing this. I don't feel alone. So I hope that helped. If you like this podcast, the rest of mine are at tjmartinell.com. You can also check out my books that they're all on Amazon. So I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the Mountain Pass, New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. This is your host, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my war room and my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia, signing off.